Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Mike Cosentino is sitting across from me.
Today, we're
really honored. We have a candidate for the U.S. Senate, Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate, Dr. Richard Carmona. Are you there, Rich?
I am. Good to speak with you, Steve and Mike.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah. Isn't technology wonderful? We got you. Richard is running for a statewide race for Senate for the against Jeff Flake, running for Kyle's soon-to-be absent seat. And I'm hopefully a lot of our listeners have heard of him, but I'm going to read some bio material here. This is just an incredible bio. And I'm a veteran, he's a veteran, and so I think, some understanding of some of the things he's been through and whatnot. But bear with me while I read to you all for a minute. Born to an Hispanic family in New York City, Dr. Richard Carmona experienced homelessness, hunger, and bleak prospects for a future education and economic opportunity. The child of parents who emigrated to the United States and struggled with alcoholism and substance abuse. Richard learned tough early lessons about economic disparities and social injustice. And as I said during the we were talking before the show, there's a lot behind that sentence. He learned early lessons about economic disparities and social injustice and experiences he's never forgotten and experiences that have given an understanding of how culture, health, education, and economic status shape our country. Like his siblings and a lot of his friends, he dropped out of high school. With a few skills, he went into the military. He learned some discipline, and that discipline applies to his life today. He applied for the Special Forces and became a combat medic. Something else that they didn't, he had a couple Purple Hearts, two Bronze Stars, combat medical badge, and other decorations. When he returned home from Vietnam, Rich became the first member of his family to earn a college degree. Through the open enrollment reserved for returning veterans, he attended Bronx Community College and earned an Associate of Arts degree. Later went to the University of California in San Francisco, worked as a registered nurse, where he earned a Bachelor's of Science degree. 2 years later, Rich completed his medical degree and received the prestigious gold-headed cane as the school's top graduate, trained in general and vascular surgery. Dr. Carmona also completed a National Institute of Health-sponsored fellowship in trauma, burns, and critical care. And he works down at the Tucson Medical Center in the University of Arizona, and has worked in the trauma care system down there. And he lives in Tucson with his wife Diane and children. While he was working down there, just in his spare time, he joined the Pima County Sheriff's Department SWAT team. And 25 years as a department sheriff, detective, and a team leader. In 1992, he rappelled from a helicopter to rescue a paramedic stranded on a mountainside when their medevac helicopter crashed during a snowstorm. In fact, this inspired a made-for-TV movie. In the course of his service, Richard received the National Top Cop Award and was named National SWAT Officer of the Year. In 2002, he was nominated as the 17th Surgeon General of the United States, which, as far as medical, is at the top of the heap. And then learned about politics. And he learned that, at least some of us feel, Richard, that science took a back seat to politics in some Republican administrations, and that became a problem for us, certainly, and possibly for you. Is that right, sir?
Yeah. Steve, Mike, thanks so much for the opportunity to be with you. As was evident when I testified in 2007 at the request of Congress, and Surgeon General Koop and Surgeon General Satcher and I testified, that there was far too much politicization of science over the years, and we needed to stop that trend, that the Surgeon General should really be empowered and in fact, not only encouraged, but mandated that the Surgeon General speak out on a regular basis on matters of science. But stick to the science. There's too many people in Washington already politicizing things.
Agreed, and that's the direction. This is the name of the show is Democratic Perspectives. It's a partisan show, and so one of the reasons we do this is we like truth, and we like to get those things out that we believe have been distorted perhaps in the past. So,
I'd like to ask Dr. Komodo, Richard, why did you decide to run for office?
Speaking of getting truth,
we always ask candidates this because it's psychologically, I think, like rappelling from a helicopter. I mean, it's a really, really difficult, stressful thing to do.
Well, it is, and you know, in my lifetime, I've faced adversity many times, whether it was in combat being shot at, or whether it was as a SWAT officer or doing rescue. This may be one of the most hostile environments I'm ever going to be in my life. and the fact, you know, the fact is that the reason I did it was for the right reason. Like so many people here in Arizona and the nation, we're fed up with the partisan politics, the name game, the blaming, people not taking responsibility for their actions or inactions. And so, you know, when a lot of my friends, the cops, the firemen, the docs I work with, you know, in conversation started saying, gee, Rich, there's a seat opening up. Senator Kyle's going to retire. You ought to run. My first answer was, I am running. I'm running as far away from Washington as I can. And then I, you know, gave it lots of thought over the next few months and had lots of conversations with my colleagues, my friends, and realized it was the right thing to do because the system is broken and we really need to start sending some reasonable people to D.C. to solve these problems rather than the same old hyper-partisan blame game where people are more worried about scoring political points and getting reelected than they are about serving the people.
And your opponent is kind of a hardcore ideologue. He's a nice looking fellow and pleasantly spoken, but when you look beneath that, everything he seems to decide seems to be decided on some sort of ideology.
Well, it certainly seems that way. You know, in getting to know him in debates and looking at his stance on a number of issues, like many people, I'm very concerned where he is on senior issues, on women's issues. The fact that he was a co-sponsor of the bill with Congressman Aiken defining legitimate rape. So, I mean, these are really outrageous, ideologically driven positions that don't benefit any population. And so as I look down the list, there's a lot of things that we differ on, but my approach is based on the best evidence and the best science.
Mike should ask this question, but why doesn't he support veteran benefits? Why has he voted against veteran benefits over and over again?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I can't tell you that. Of course, he's told me, I just don't understand how, in debates, I brought this up. And he says, well, you just don't understand how Washington works. And I've said to him, well, Congressman, you may be the only person that thinks Washington works because it's not working. The fact is that on several bills that I pointed out, he voted no. Now, of course, he feigns the outrage, and of course, he loves veterans. But, Congressman, the Iraqi Afghanistan Veterans Association recently gave you a failing grade. In the past, other veterans organizations have failed you for your lack of support for veterans, even though there are times you may have said something nice or done something nice. But when it was important, especially now when we have thousands of these kids coming home, needing job training, needing to get veterans benefits, kids who risk their life in combat, who all that was being debated was, should we give them a $1,500 bonus for taking fire, you know, in combat? And he voted no against all those things. That's the record.
And
you know, and he's trying to run from it.
And it's not just kids. We got these guys are in the men and women in their 30s and 40s that are coming back and with some serious issues. It doesn't matter the nice things that you say. It's the votes that count. With Mr. Flake, and as you pointed out, you can say nice things and show your appreciation, but it's the votes that count. That's when it counts. I do want to mention your list of endorsements is extensive, but and a couple of things, and then we'll get to your issues. We want to talk about those senior health things and where you stand on that. But we're looking at a Republican Senator Pete Hershberger.
Yes.
A quote, Rich's only commitment will be to make decisions based on reason and the best science. and we were talking about that earlier, he is running not to keep a party in power. He's running to serve Arizona, which I think is just an excellent quote from an opposition kind of guy.
And I think pretty much what we see in you as a candidate.
Yeah, and then we see that in your presentation. One more. This is certainly not high on my list. Corporation Commissioner Chris Mays. Richard has served our state in both public and private sector and knows how to work together to create jobs, attract businesses, and build a stronger economy. So testimonials from the other side on both the economy and on the science part.
What about jobs? What can be done? Because jobs are central to our situation now.
Well, I think the most importantly, we have to start to look at the uncertainty in the business environment. Small businesses are hurting. They're being dwarfed by expenses like in healthcare, having to take people off the rolls of healthcare so we get more uninsured. So first and foremost, we have to bring some certainty to the environment. And one of the ways to do that is we need comprehensive tax reform. The system is broken. People don't understand. Every 6 months or year, Congress is taking actions to put a Band-Aid on a broken system. We're at this fiscal cliff now, and they're on vacation. You know, essentially, we have not been able to get anything out of them. So comprehensive tax reform, we need to be able to create an environment that inspires our innovators and entrepreneurs to want to come here with their best ideas and build businesses. Because make no mistake, to get out from under this fiscal cliff, this terrible debt we have, which is now exceeding our gross domestic product, it's not only cutting expenses. We have to do that. We have to stop spending, but we also have to have economic growth that goes along with that. And we have to create the environment. That's part of government's responsibility, to create an environment that Arizona looks so attractive to people with the next great idea to start a company, to hire people, to create businesses, that has to happen. And we can start that with comprehensive tax reform.
Yeah, it is, and I love what you're saying here, because the uncertainty, going back to that part of it, and both in taxes and the whole economy in general, the blame is at Washington's feet about the uncertainty. I don't care whether it's administration or Congress, they seem to share, but certainly Congress, I think the larger share of the uncertainty, and that business has trouble with uncertainty. They need to, just like we like to know.
Well, I think some people want to use the uncertainty in Congress to benefit themselves politically. They think uncertainty and fear-based politics will help them to power.
Well, that's true.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's, you know, this exemplifies how broken Congress is, how each side just blames the other, nothing gets done. You know, it's kind of like we're watching this tennis game in perpetuity, and we look left, we look right, we look left, we look right, and there's still no solutions. We have to stop that. I mean, Congress really works best, I think, and democracy works best when you have reasonable Republicans and Democrats who can solve the problems and get things done. I mean, it's happened in the past. Yes, Congress is tough, and it's been that way for a century or more. I've heard all of that. But, you know, there was a time when you had the Goldwaters and the Udalls who managed to get things done, and we got CAP, and in Phoenix we got the monorail line there. There are things that government can provide as far as helping with infrastructure so that the innovators, so that the entrepreneurs are willing to put their capital at risk because this is such a wonderful place to live. And then we start to get more certainty in the marketplace. And because of that, things will begin to happen. We've seen it happen with TGen up in Phoenix. Dr. Crow, the president, I mean, he's a great leader. He understands innovation and entrepreneurs. He brings in TGen. They have one of the best genomic programs in the nation today. So there was a little investment to get it started, but now they're hiring people. They're bringing in money. And they're adding to the certainty in our economic environment.
Right, and that's exactly the kind of job discussion that we need to have and we like to have. But let's go ahead and I want to talk more about that, but I do want to hear about Social Security. I want to hear about some of these senior issues. We have plenty of time left, but I want to make sure we get this in. Tell us, Dr. Kimona, about some of the what have you talked about? What have you found out there on the campaign trail about senior issues?
Hey, well, again, thanks so much. The senior issues are really important to me, probably like all of us, because we're approaching that age ourselves,
exactly.
If nothing else. But, you know, on the other side, you know, Congressman Flake and his colleagues talk about these things as entitlements. And, you know, maybe that's the legal definition, but I look at this as an earned benefit. I've been a worker for nearly a half a century, and just about every check I have been paid, the government takes money out for Social Security and for Medicare. And the reason they do that is they're smart enough half a century ago when we put a lot of these programs together to be able to look down the road and say, gee, you know, we should have some accommodation for people when they retire, that they don't have to worry about going bankrupt when they get their health care, or that that $1,000 a month check from Social Security is really what separates them from being bankrupt and living their life with dignity as they live their last years.
So why are we talking about better Social Security rather than cutting Social Security? I mean, many people in northern Arizona, they have no pensions. They're dependent. The Social Security is the majority of the income for, 60-70% of the people, and it's even higher here. Why aren't we talking about better Social Security?
There's no question, and that's it. You know, it's where I was headed in my remarks. I just see this really as earned benefits, that this is a contract that government has with its workforce that says, you work hard your life, we're going to hold your money, and when you retire, whatever age it is we decide we retire, we'll provide a little bit of a stipend for you that is your money. We've just held it for you, and we'll make sure you get health care with Medicare so that you're never worried about being destitute. And I think that it's about really a civil society which values its workforce and says, we want you to live out your last years with dignity, with integrity, and not worry. And so I am unwilling to put the risk back on the seniors, as Congressman Flake and others want to do, by voucherizing, by privatizing, by making the risk leave government and go to the individual. I think that there is a value in having that safety net so that we have people that feel confident in their senior years, for the reasons you mentioned, that they can live out those years with dignity and respect. And right now, I just think that this is a really not good way to move forward, as Congressman Flake is espousing, which is to, you know, privatize and voucherize those functions and put the risk on the person and a market which we see has failed us already in the past.
Yeah, I mean, if the private sector was going to deliver medical care to all the American people, it had a century or so to do it. It's just not done it. So something has to be done.
Yeah. So it's really about transferring risk. And, you know, I think we've lost confidence in our markets. The people who have been hired or elected to protect us, that had the fiduciary responsibility to watch Fannie and Freddie, Wall Street, all the markets, they failed us. I mean, that's why this catastrophe has come upon us. And now you're asking the seniors to trust the very infrastructure that has already failed them. So I think we're way, way far away from that. And I think the government's role as a safety net provider for these things, when the workers have invested their whole life, is the way to continue going and to strengthen Social Security and Medicare as we move forward, especially for the younger folks that are coming into the workforce now.
I sometimes feel in New York and in the East Coast that the people involved in making policy decisions, whether they're liberal, conservative, Democratic, Republican, don't understand the importance of the physical importance of Social Security and Medicare to our elder survival out here.
Yeah, they are. I mean, as you pointed out, there's so many millions of people that basically just, you know, exist month to month with their Social Security check and their Medicare for their illnesses. And without those, we would have a huge amount of people who were financially on the brink of catastrophe every day, struggling, worried about having to, where will they live, moving in with their children, and you know, just untenable situations, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Let's extend that this discussion to women's health. As from your perspective as a former Surgeon General, let's talk about, I don't understand the other side's attack on women's health issues, Richard, go ahead, tell us a little bit about your position on women's health.
Well, first and foremost, as Surgeon General of the United States and as a practicing physician and a hospital administrator for many, many years and a health system administrator, you know, I know the last thing you want to do is place a barrier between any patient and their care. If that happens, people will come to care later with more complicating factors. It will cost society more money. And if they don't have insurance, they'll show up in an emergency room, and we all pay anyway. So these ideologically driven attempts to push an ideology are going to have very bad consequences in cost and in what we call morbidity, complications of disease. And Congressman Flake, of course, co-sponsored the bill with Congressman Aiken defining legitimate rape. He also moved to defund Planned Parenthood, of which most of those funds are about women getting access to basic health care,
exactly.
A pap smear, a breast exam, some lab tests. And this is really, really short-sighted. It's going to hurt the women in general. But they're very consistent. I mean, they also voted against equal pay for women. And that doesn't make any sense for me. I mean, democracies fail when we have to pass legislation so that women are treated equally as men. That doesn't make any sense either. Yet, Congressman Flake is on the wrong side of that as well.
Yeah, he seems like a pleasant person and all of that, but when you look at these votes, I mean, they're really kind of very not helpful, let's put it that way, to ordinary American citizens, to women and men both. And I'm ask you what's driving him, but I think it's ideology. I think that we need someone less ideological in there who will look at these issues. And that's why you got into conflict when you were Surgeon General, right? Because they tried to push you one way. And
well, it's true. I mean, on many issues, whether it was women's issues, whether it was abstinence-only, stem cells, choice issues, you know, I looked for the science, and I always spoke the science as the doctor of the nation should. And there were numerous attempts to change what I was going to say, rewrite speeches, edit reports so that they were more conforming with a political ideology. And I refused to do that. And it wasn't my goal or it was my job description to be the doctor of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. My job was more important. You're the doctor of the people. You speak the truth, the science to the people so they can make the best decision for themselves. And that's what I always did.
I can understand that you get pressure from both sides. But it seems like that the other side pressures you to distort the truth. And I suppose the Democratic side pressures you to get out certain positions, but not distorting your words or distorting the truth. So, I mean, there's a reason I'm sure you're running as a Democrat, and I'm going to assume that that's got something to do with it.
And they tried to recruit you as a Republican, I know, not more than three or four times, or I would say more than that even.
Well, you know, your points are well taken. The irony of this whole thing is now with the negative ads that Congressman Flake continues to pursue against me is that not too long ago, I was the Republicans' favorite child. I was being recruited for governor. In fact, then Secretary of State Jan Brewer and a contingent of her Republican colleagues came out to visit me as Surgeon General to ask me to run as a Republican. John Kyle recruited me to run as a Republican, and at a different time they wanted me to run for Congress to the seat that Gabby Giffords ultimately took in the old CD-8. So it just shows you how disingenuous this whole process is.
So these attack ads are by... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said because I chose to run in the other party now because I could not support the ideological approach to things that we've already discussed, where they are on immigration, women's issues, and so on. And the best fit for me was the Democratic Party, although not perfect. I mean, I still, you know, I'm not a perfect fit there, but certainly on the big issues of the day, I fit more comfortably. But that's how disingenuous this whole process is. The very people now that are, you know, challenging me and castigating me and accusing me of all these things are the ones that were singing my praises not too long ago. And it's simply all about party politics, and that's what's killing the nation today because it's so dysfunctional and so disingenuous.
God, I wish we could say that for the next 10 minutes on the show because that's so true. And that, I think that's what Flake means when you say you don't know. He says you don't know how Washington works. Washington works on insincerity. Washington works on misrepresentation versions of the truth, and you're fighting that, and then we are thrilled that you're there fighting it for us.
Well, I think that what your listeners need to know, this remark that when Congressman Flake often responds and says, well, Dr. Carmona just doesn't know how Washington works. Well, that's the problem. Washington doesn't work, and he's running to keep it going the way it has been. It's a broken system. And so I don't think there's anybody in any of the audiences we've been at when they heard him make that remark said, oh, yeah, he's going to, you know, this is a guy that's part of the broken system and wants to perpetuate it based on his ideology. And that's a scary thought.
Yeah. How did they react? Just to change a little bit to the bio, how did they react in your old neighborhood in Harlem when you went off and became a Surgeon General of the United States?
Exactly.
I mean, I lived right south of there, and I just wonder what the reaction was in the old neighborhood.
You know, it's interesting that I enlisted in the Army when I was 17, and I think the first time I came back, I was probably just before I went to Vietnam, which was when I was 19. And, you know, I saw everybody on the block, and it was like they were more enamored with my cool uniform than what I was really doing, and they didn't really have an understanding. And every few years, I'd go back just to show my kids where I grew up, or, you know, my wife. And then I remember one time seeing some of the kids on the block, and they were joking. They said, well, what are you doing now? I said, well, I'm in medical school. I'm going to be a doctor. And they were laughing. They thought I was kidding them. And one of the kids said to me, oh, they're going to figure out you escaped from here. They're going to send you home. And I remember that. But, you know, it was some of the best experiences I've had in life, understanding what we call health disparities and social injustice and discrimination. You know, having lived those, they're real. They're not just theoretical considerations that you read in a book. And I think they've helped to make me a better police officer, a better soldier, a better surgeon general, to understand how complex life really is.
We've only got a couple minutes left, and but yeah, you dropped out of high school. I mean, who was that Richard Carmona?
It was a Richard Carmona that was just surviving every day, like most of my friends. Most of the kids I grew up with in Harlem didn't graduate from high school. You know, they lived day to day. And, you know, I was homeless for a time. We bounced around. I lived in the projects with my grandmother, and I've lived at friends' houses. You know, I wasn't focused, but it wasn't because counselors didn't try. I had two wonderful counselors in high school, Mr. Blau and Mr. DeGran, who preached to me every day.
You still remember their names.
I had. You know, so it was me. I just didn't stay focused. But once I got in the Army and I learned how to stay disciplined and focus on a mission, then I was able to appreciate my fullest opportunity, all my fullest potential. But it's because we have an infrastructure of opportunity in this nation, because it's a GI Bill, because it was an open enrollment program in a junior college for combat vets. I was able to get a second chance, and that's why I made it.
What would you do? We've got 2 minutes left. How would you sum up your campaign, your most important issue, the ones that you feel in your gut and your heart are what you would do to help people in northern Arizona and the country?
Well, we've discussed the issues already. You know, about jobs, about the economy, about the debt, about spending wisely, about women's health issues, about the seniors, about veterans issues. But most importantly, what I understand is this is about selfless service. My whole life has been serving my community, my state, and my nation in different positions from entry level right up to the highest position as being the doctor of the nation. And I understand this is about me having the privilege to serve you. It's about selfless service. It's about subordinating my own interests for the time I serve, and that in everything I do every single day, what should be leading my thought processes, everything that I'm deciding or weighing in on should bring you added value.
Thank you for being with us. We're running out of time. It's great talking to you. Good luck on your campaign. Next week we'll have the Corporation Commission candidates on. Three of them at a time.
This will be on VVID.org. This today's presentation, today's show will be on VVID.org.
You've
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.